Hey, it's 9 minutes after 5 o'clock in Central Virginia. This is Charlottesville right now, News Radio 1070 WINA. Happy Monday! I hope you had a great weekend. And I'm glad you're here. It's going to be a great week. My name is Coy Barefoot. Welcome to the little program. We're into the second hour of fun. Donovan Webster joins us live in studio. His books include Aftermath, The Remnants of War, The Burma Road, and Babylon by Bus. He is in studio to talk about a new piece that comes out, what, this week?
This week.
Very exciting. And he's going to tell us all about it. Really, really cool because of where you went for this piece. Now, you've been all over the world for National Geographic and you name it, but this was your first trip to Chernobyl, is that right?
It was fascinating.
Yeah, that's cool. Just get right up on that microphone.
Okay.
First, tell us, Don, who the piece is for, because this is a new magazine, right?
It is a new magazine. Men's Health has a new magazine called Best Life. It's been out about a year. And they've been working sort of into monthly issues, and now they're into full-time monthly issues. And my editor there, who used to be executive editor at Men's Health, said, you know, we got to talking about where we could go for a total offbeat travel piece, and we sort of settled on Chernobyl. And it was fascinating. It was maybe the most interesting place I've ever been.
So the approach for the article is vacationing and how do I say it? Chernobyl or Chernobyl. Chernobyl, okay.
Yeah, well, it wasn't really a vacation so much as just sort of go and see what's there.
Yeah.
It's part of a travel package, and you can actually go there. There's a company called Solo East Travel in Kiev in the Ukraine that you can set up trips, and it's not cheap. It's about $600 a day, but it is, you know, it's sort of the most actively enforced wilderness in Europe, and it's one of the largest wildernesses in Europe. It's 21,000 square kilometers, and it's just amazing in there. Everyone was pretty much 390,000 people had to get out of there within about a week.
Yeah,
and everything's just like they left it.
So tell me first, when did you go? When were you there?
July.
This summer?
End of June, July, yeah.
Okay. Now, what's the reaction of your wife when you say, hey, guess where I'm going for my next piece? I'm going to a little place called Chernobyl.
She was like, be careful, honey. and it's funny, when we got there, they made us sign contracts that basically said, if you can't wear open-toed shoes, don't touch a lot of stuff, don't bring anything home with you, and if you get sick or your health deteriorates, it's not our fault.
Yeah.
Which is a little sobering.
We're talking with Don Webster. The piece comes out this week in Best Life magazine. Remind folks again, Chernobyl, what happened there, when, and how devastating this was.
It was April of 1986, and the irony of the whole thing is that it was the accident started because of they were doing a safety check. They were taking reactor 4 offline. It was going to be 10 reactors. It was literally the Soviet Union's crowning technological city. When they'd bring in diplomats and things like that, that's where they'd take them. It had the Soviet Union's first supermarket. It was amazing. They had the schools there, spectacular, the best schools in the USSR. And they're taking this reactor offline, you know, maintenance, just a routine thing, and they wanted to see if, while taking it offline, if the safety system still worked, and something happened. And, you know, human error is prominently mentioned, but basically the conduits that take the steam to the turbines closed, and inside the containment vessel, the pressure spiked and it exploded, and then when air hit the core, it sent 14,000 tons of nuclear material into the atmosphere.
My God. So what was what do we know now, 20 years later? What happened? What was the fallout, literally?
They don't really know. There was a big report, and they say that it may have been somewhat mechanical, but it was human error certainly played a part. The smoke, the Russians didn't say a word until it took almost a week for the smoke to travel up to Norway. And there they, all of a sudden the radiation went crazy, and they were like, what's going on? What's going on? They thought they had an accident. And the Russians finally said, okay, it's us. We've taken steps to sort of stabilize things. But by then, the smoke had drifted all the way to the UK, and a front pushed through and pushed all the smoke back across. Before it was over, about 10 days later, the smoke had covered all of Europe. And for that year, no one really could eat the fruits and vegetables. Things went crazy in terms of growing. No one knew exactly what to do. Nothing like this had ever happened.
Yeah.
But they closed down. Like I said, they drew two concentric rings around the site itself. And basically, they're guarded by sentries, and you can't go in without paperwork and all sorts of stuff. And
how long was it? They got everybody out, I would imagine.
Yeah, they got everybody.
Did anybody die? I mean, how many people died?
Well, it depends on who you ask. At least 6,000 died. 28 the firemen died right away. And then at least 6,000, officially 6,400 and some, died according to the Ukrainians and the IAEA, which is the International Atomic Energy Association. But a lot of people think it's much higher than that, hundreds of thousands of people at least, because there's lots of leukemias and stuff that, you know, may have, you know, have, that may have contributed to. They won't say for certain. But
we do know if a nuclear cloud goes over you're likely to see this kind of thing, and it's very related to that.
Yeah, it's almost got to be. In fact, one of my guides was working there at the time and is still working there. He's the head of sort of radiation there. And he talked about how the weather, even the weather, you know, everything changed. The trees stayed green into November and December around there. And, you know, in Kiev, 65 miles south, the leaves had fallen off. But up around the exclusion zone, everything had been knocked out of balance, and things were flowering into the wintertime. Nothing made any sense. I mean, when nature was just totally knocked off. It was crazy.
We're talking with Donovan Webster about a magazine piece he wrote, comes out this week in Best Life magazine, about his trip to Chernobyl. So how many people did they evacuate?
I think it was 390,000.
So for a long time, you couldn't live anywhere near there, right?
You still can't. About 300 people have moved back in. They're mostly older people, and the government's finally said, you know, that's fine. And I visited with some of them. One woman who was wonderful, she's about 78 years old. She does nothing, but she's got an amazing garden. She gardens. They bring her bread. They look after her. They check her water regularly to make sure it's not radioactive, and the vegetables she creates. And she makes the worst moonshine in the world. But we had to have some. And she told a great story. She said, finally, in the end, I know the wolves will get me just like they got all my dogs. There's wolves everywhere. The animals have come back there with a vengeance, which is the fascinating part of the story. You know, when people talk about saving the environment, what they're really sort of talking about is saving people. Because in my experience at Chernobyl, basically, the environment took the place back, and not in a vindictive, violent sort of way, but more like a slow flood. You know, trees have grown up inside the houses, and the houses are just twisting off their foundations. The animals, I mean, everywhere I looked, I saw wild boar, I saw deer, I saw wild horses, eagles. It was amazing. I mean, in this city, it was a city of 48,000 people that is empty now, and there are wild animals just walking the streets. It's crazy.
It's like some movie about the end of the world,
right?
Or something.
Right, like I Am Legend. That's what it reminded me of.
Yeah,
I had just
yeah.
seen that before I went, actually, and I wanted to hunt, actually, and I wanted to go get a wild boar, and they were like, "You cannot do it. Do not bring weapons." And there was a guy there who also worked there, who's now a sort of an illegal resettler again. They have these resettlers, like I say, 300 of them. And he said, come back in the fall and we'll go hunt for boar. We'll make sausage. And I was like, I might do that.
Hunting in the city.
Yeah, hunting in the city.
That is amazing.
Isn't that strange?
Yeah, it really is.
It's
so
surreal.
So did you actually go to the plant?
I did. And it's
ground zero for Chernobyl.
Yeah. it's familiar in the way. I mean, if you've never been to the Great Pyramids, you know what they look like. If you've never been to New York, you still know what the Chrysler Building looks like. It's that same way. If I showed you a picture of the place, you'd go, oh, that's Chernobyl. And you go right there, and of course, as soon as you get there, the Geiger counter goes crazy, and you can only stay for a little while because otherwise you get sick. And so we went there and we hung out there for a little while, and then we started doing tours, you know, sort of outlying tours more concentrically away from the.
So
site.
It's still totally the ground zero in Chernobyl is still totally polluted. It's totally nuclear.
Yeah, you can't. They bring it on, and if there are some places to stay there because there are about 3,000 workers who look after it, maintain it, that kind of thing. And but they most of them leave at night, but they bring in the food every day for where they eat. So it's nothing. Even the grass along the side of the road, they cut it back a little bit for better visibility, and then they compact it all and have to put it in containment because even that's radioactive.
The grass that they cut.
Yeah. In fact, the stuff
amazing.
That takes its nutrition from the earth, the moss is the most radioactive stuff there is. But you know, they were like, don't eat any vegetables, don't eat any fruit from here, don't. It's you wouldn't want to. I was standing. Sergey, the guide. Had put his Geiger counter down on some moss, and the background reading was about 47, which is a little bit high in terms of sort of radioactivity, and it leapt to 1350 like that.
Really?
Yeah, which, you know, 600 if you spend any time around it is deadly. So he's like, so don't stand on the moss.
God. What's the title of the piece?
I think it's called Nature's Revenge. I've got it right here. Let me look. And it really isn't revenge so much as that. That's just a good title for the story. I mean, really, it's about. The story is really just about if we weren't there, this is what would happen to the world. And it's amazing. I mean, you go to this city, Pripyat, which had 48,000 people, and 22 years later, if you were to go in there And they'd say, okay, everybody can move back in. They'd have to bulldoze the city. I mean, trees have grown up everywhere. It's ruined. You know, they had public squares and things. And the trees, they're just covered with trees now. And where there was beautiful marble and things has all just been totally.
What's so amazing, we interviewed, I can't remember his name, but the guy who wrote The World Without Us. Uh-huh. I interviewed him a few months ago. And he talks about, well, this is what would happen. You've actually been to a place on the planet where it is happening.
Yeah.
Where they pull people out of a city, thousands of people out of a city,
yeah.
and let the earth have it.
Yeah.
And you have walked the streets of this city.
It's
and,
amazing.
And seen what it looks like.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's really, truly. The piece starts, I'm standing in an amusement park. And there's trees growing up through this huge Ferris wheel. And, the bumper car area is totally just ruined and amuck with weeds. And the wind's coming up. And in all the buildings, there's apartment blocks, 15, 18 stories all around. And the wind's blowing. And it gets in through broken windows or still open doors. People just abandon the place. And all you hear is slamming doors. It's the most haunting thing in the world.
Wow.
It's crazy. It was really fun. It was a wonderful week.
But really spooky, Don.
Yeah, totally spooky.
Really spooky.
Yeah. I have had a couple nightmares, actually. It was really crazy. But, I mean, what a weird week. I arrive in Kiev, which is a wonderful place. Where they'd had the Orange Revolution on the International Square. Paul McCartney had a huge concert that night. And people are walking around. There's cafes and people are drinking coffee. And it's midnight. And I'm like, this is the greatest city. And I go to bed and I get up the next day. And it happens again. There are people all over the square. And they're selling coffee and beer. And people are just walking around, taking it all in, looking at each other. And that night, there's an international fireworks competition all around us.
Fireworks competition.
It was great.
That's
every
great.
Night. This is
Kiev in the Ukraine.
Kiev in Ukraine. The next day, we got up and we drove up to Chernobyl and spent several days up there, staying at night in a nuclear shielded hotel. And there's one cafe in Chernobyl, and we went there at night, and it was like the Star Wars bar. I mean, it's the strangest place. And it was really fun. It was a riot. It was one of the most interesting, unique trips I've ever been on. I would actually encourage people to go, even if only for a day trip, because then you could spend some time.
Well, just to see it sounds like something truly, as we've been saying, out of science fiction, and yet you must have to stand there and remind yourself that what you're looking at is real.
This is real, yeah.
It's not a set.
Yeah. In fact, I say that I kept saying that to myself. This is real. And there were literally animals everywhere. You'd get out, and I was walking through the grass in front of the hospital at one point, and I'm pushing all these like 5-6-inch lizards in front of me. We're driving along, and boom, there's a wild boar at the side of the road, or some turtles, which we have here in Albemarle County, but you don't think of this place. You think of it as just sort of concrete on the map of your mind, and instead it's actually this huge wilderness preserve.
Yeah, and the wolves are roaming in and out of the homes and apartment buildings.
Yeah.
And
yeah, the wolves are the top tier predators, and they don't know how many exactly there are, but they cull about 25 a year, and they know when the wolves, all the predator populations are getting out of control because people who are there have pets and men have dogs, things like that, and all of a sudden all the dogs just disappear.
Oh my God. Donovan Webster, he's the author of a new piece coming out this week in Best Life magazine, brought to you by the folks at Men's Life magazine. Best Life, which you were saying before we went on, it's sort of like the new Esquire.
Yeah, that's what they're aiming at is sort of Esquire,
which is a great thing to aim at. I mean,
they're doing a really good job. Steve Brine, the editor, is a really, really smart guy, and they got Bob Love, who was executive editor at Rolling Stone, and I mean, they've put it together a very good team, and it's a beautiful looking magazine. I mean, you can get it on the newsstands or anywhere, but they're doing a really good job. I'm enjoying working with them, actually.
Donovan Webster, the piece comes out this week, and make sure you check it out. It's going to be fantastic. In Best Life magazine. So, Don, what are you working on now? Before you do that, I was sitting here while you were talking. I was thinking, I wanted to ask you, what are the Russians plan to do with this place? I mean, what's the long-term plan for Chernobyl? Is it just they're just going to let the wolves have it?
Yeah, they're just going to let the
wolves have it. Else can you do, I guess?
Yeah, you can't. There's nothing they can do. It's going to take a long time for the radioactivity to go down. I went fly fishing there. I had a great time, man. I had a great time.
Did vacation there.
Yeah, sort of, yeah. And they have to leave it go. But there's armed guards at every road going in and out, and they're very serious guys. And you literally can be shot for going in there without proper paperwork. If you take anything from it, it's 5 years in jail. I mean, they're not fooling around. So it's off limits, and they don't know exactly what to do with it. And when I first called and said I want to go hunting there, they thought I was crazy. Maybe I am crazy, but they thought I was nuts. And it was just a great trip. I really, like I say, it's called Solo East Travel. It's in Kiev. And the guy who runs it, his name is Sergey Sergei Yeremchuk, and he's a former Red Army soldier who sort of gets the surrealness of it all.
Yeah.
And
knows that there are people in the world who want to experience walking through a city that is overrun by wolves.
He gets it. And we had a picnic one day, you know, we had a great time. he totally gets it. And it's really fun. I mean, he also gets the sadness of it. He said, you know, and he introduced me to people who would, you know, move back in illegally. And he said, you know, and all these people, they all say the same thing. You know, basically, you have this life, you have this beautiful place, and then because of an accident,
the next day it's gone.
It's gone. And, you know, how do you deal? You know, and he actually says in the piece, you know, they were the future, then the future ended. And I was like, wow.
And it's true. This was the city that Russia was holding up. This is the future of the Soviet Union, is Chernobyl.
Yeah.
If you want to see what we have in mind for our future, go to Chernobyl.
12,000 school kids, amazing schools, Bauhaus type buildings. You know, you can walk through the schools, and it's just like all the kids left. It's so strange. You know, their books are still out. There's little posters on the walls, you know, with the good fox and the bad fox, and the good fox is doing the right thing and the bad. Yeah. You know, that kind of stuff. And it's the same stuff that you'd have at the elementary school where your kids go. And except that there's 22 years of dust laying around, even the little cubby holes where they'd put their jackets and stuff. It's all still there. Records and the record players.
Amazing.
It's really weird.
I would be so spooked. I gotta admit, it's like a Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah.
You know, you're just sort of walking around and it's like everybody just disappeared.
Yeah. There's one moment that actually didn't make it into the story that it was really kind of heartbreaking. We were in this music store. And, you know, the ceiling was bowed because obviously there had been some rain getting in the roof over time. And there was a sea of pianos. You know, these people had all been wealthy enough that they could have pianos in their houses. And I couldn't take it anymore. Sergei's like dinging on the piano keys. And I walked out in the back to the loading dock and the sun was out and there were lizards on the wall in the sun. And I thought, you know, wow, these people were so optimistic. And then one day. Well, it was actually a night, but in one night, boom, it was over.
Yeah, the government comes in and says, you're gone.
You're gone. And
drop everything.
Yeah.
Come with us.
And it was very disruptive. They just took them to where they could put them, and no one had jobs, and everyone had to stay inside. And, you know, it must have been terrifying. It was really, I mean, I just can't imagine your future sort of turning on a dime like that. But
amazing. The article is in Best Life magazine. The author is Donovan Webster. He's the author of such books as Aftermath, The Burma Road, Babylon by Bus. What are you working on now?
I just got back.
What's next?
It's a story for outside. I'm just finishing it up. It's about, you can look him up online, actually. His name is Dolphin 56. And outside was like, we want you to do a really weird quest story. And I said, well, I got one for you. I've been following this guy for about 15 years. He's a wild dolphin who's got a number tattooed on his back from a population study, and that was taken in Florida when he was a baby. But he spends every year swimming up the East Coast, and he kind of puts on little SeaWorld shows for people and then begs for food. And he's beloved by all these, and all these scientists watch him to see. He's 30 years old now. He's been doing this for a long time.
And it's a wild dolphin.
Yeah, and I'm like his little Ahab. I chase him all the time. And so it's all about the people, but it's really about the people you meet who also have come to love this dolphin. And it's kind of a fun story about this little subculture inside.
I have to tell you, this summer, we go down to Virginia Beach in the summers, which some folks don't like, we love. And we take the dolphin watch every summer.
Mm-hmm.
And that is such a thrill
yeah.
to go out there and see these things. And the people who really follow these, a little fin comes up and they know who it is. I mean, they just see a fin and they know who it is.
Yeah.
Because it's just like a fingerprint, you know. It's like a face is that little fin, and they can recognize it.
Yeah.
Which a dolphin that is.
Yeah. And you know, they're like so many. I mean, my dogs talk to me all the time. I'm just not smart enough to listen. But these things are actually reaching across, especially 56. It's literally reaching across. He prefers people more than other dolphins. And he literally wants to say, come on, I want to hang out with you. It's really an amazing thing. And then I get this study from England that shows that there are thousands of these things around the world do the exact same thing. I mean, they want to talk to people. And it's really
interesting. And these are dolphins that spend more time with people. Wild dolphins.
Wild dolphins. Yeah.
Not, this isn't the kind of thing in the Bahamas that you can swim with in a pool.
No, these aren't captive in any way. I mean, this guy basically, when he was a baby, got this number tattooed on his thing. As they wanted to see, most of them don't go but about 20 kilometers from where they were born. And this guy, like this little class of other ones, just decided the world's big and interesting, and I'm going to go see it, and I'm going to go make friends. And he's the happiest dolphin. He's like big around as a 55-gallon drum. Everybody, although you're not supposed to because there's Marine Mammal Protection Act, you're not supposed to feed them. But this dude eats.
So how did you find out about
large?
How did you find out? Did somebody call you?
No, it was a newspaper article like in the 90s. And
so when did you first see him?
I have never seen him. I have
But you just sort
him.
Of track him.
Yeah. I've chased him. In fact, I was just in New Jersey a week ago Sunday, and I was out all day Saturday and Sunday, and I didn't see him. And he'd been right there the day before, and 2 days after I left, he was back. And I was like, darn it. But it's kind of fun. I use the word benign Ahab to define myself.
And that's for Outside Magazine.
That's for Outside.
There you go. Donovan Webster, a local author and writer. His fantastic books include Aftermath, The Burma Road, Babylon by Bus. His latest piece comes out this week in Best Life magazine, and it's all about his visit, his vacation to Chernobyl in the old Soviet Union. Don, thanks so much for being here.
Oh, it's always a pleasure, man.